Well, to become one of the top 50 restaurants in the world, you have to serve up something that is very special. Manresa Restaurant of Los Gatos, California, is something that is very special indeed. Biodynamic vegetables from Love Apple Farms. Peering into the gardens at Love Apple Farm, we see Chef David Kinch and Farmer Cynthia Sandberg mixing up the biodynamic preparations of Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner. And we ask, can the mysticism of biodynamics maintain Manresa as the best of the best?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 558th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Milan, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And with us today on the boards, we have engineer Dave Michaels. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
And Parmalee Taff. Hello, Parmalee.
Hello.
Folks, it isn't easy to become one of the best in any field, but it's especially difficult in the world of fine dining because of the competition is just so incredibly intense. Thanks to food prophets like Alice Waters of Chez Panisse in Berkeley, many fine dining restaurants throughout the land now source their food directly from local farmers. And so the local fresh foods that were the new wave of fine dining are now almost commonplace. So this leads us to ask, what must one serve up to become and maintain yourself as the best of the best? And here to help us, we have David Kinch, the chef in charge of Manresa Restaurant in Los Gatos, California. Welcome to the Food Chain, David.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Chef David, gosh, that's quite a term when it's applied to the top restaurants of the world. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this world of fine dining and the incredibly competitive, world of fine dining.
Well, I've been in the restaurant business my whole life. The first job I had when I was in high school was working in restaurants.
Was it a fast food restaurant?
It was not. It was. I grew up in New Orleans, and you know, in New Orleans they eat very well, even on a very casual basis. So it started as an after school job.
Why is it that New Orleans has such good food?
Well, they have a lot of tradition. They have a long history of tradition. You know, they were occupied over a 100-year period by both France, Spain, Italy. All these cultures contributed great facets to the indigenous culture down there, the Creole culture down there, and that's why the food is so good. It's such a great mix.
So we have a lot of very interesting European traditions that became focused right there in New Orleans.
New Orleans is a great eating town.
Yeah, it is. And growing up there, you worked in some of the fine dining restaurants, and that also has a way of fashioning how you see and think about eating, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Obviously, you weren't washing dishes, though. You were doing...
I started washing dishes. It started at the bottom. But, you know, I love to eat. I always love to eat. I still love to eat very much. You know, I love going to great restaurants. I love drinking great wine. Mm-hmm. It's still a big passion of mine. And, you know, when you cook for other people, and you're trying to make people happy. I mean, that's really the goal, is to cook for the customers and not necessarily for yourself. So I still get great joy out of making people happy. And I think the day that feeling ends the day I leave the restaurant business, but that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, how did you get into the big leagues? I mean, when we talk about Manresa Restaurant, we're talking about a restaurant that has been named by Restaurant Magazine as one of the top 50 in the world.
That was a big surprise. I mean, you know, I went to culinary school. I worked in various restaurants around the United States. I spent a lot of time on the East Coast working in New York. I worked in Europe for several years. So it's just moving up, trying to work with many different people, mentoring under great chefs, people I had a lot of great respect for. And I ended up, you know, with the opportunity to have my own place in the South Bay in Saratoga. We opened up a really small restaurant there in 1995. It was called Sensovi. We were there almost 8 years. And the kitchen was very small. It was just about the size of a closet. And after about 8 years, I thought I was going to go crazy. And at that point in time, you know, we wanted to relocate. We wanted to move into a bigger space that allow us to become the best restaurant we could possibly be with no limitations to any kind of physical space. And we looked for locations for many years. We almost went back to San Francisco on a couple occasions, but we found a spot that we really, really liked in Los Gatos. We thought the South Bay and the Santa Cruz Mountains area has been very good to us. We opened up Manresa. Manresa essentially was a relocation of the old Sensovi. A lot of the old employees from the old restaurant are there. So we have a big family. We have a lot of people who have been with us since the beginning in 1995. And
that always makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course.
For our guests listening in Kansas and Florida and Chicago and whatnot, Los Gatos is a little, I guess, kind of a bedroom community located right above Silicon Valley. So it's a kind of an interesting personality, and the people who go there are kind of interesting people, too. They get a lot of techies.
Sure. So we're very lucky. Our local clientele base is, you know, they tend to be savvy. You know, we have this great wine culture here in California and all through the South Bay and the peninsula. We have a lot of people who have been very, very savvy about wine for a long time. They have the wherewithal to travel and to explore various food cultures, and this is a great market to tap into.
Well, how did Manresa get to be in the top 50 restaurants in the world? I mean, you said it came as a surprise, but...
Well, I don't know exactly how that happened. I mean, we've been open 5 years now at the current location, and, you know, I try not to worry about too much about awards and things like that. I think if you concentrate on doing what you really like and what you really love to do, and I think all the accolades, they tend to fall in place, you know, and that's good. If you worry about that, then you can kind of stagnate.
So what were you doing in the kitchen, though, to get there? I mean, you have to be a pretty aggressive guy.
Well, not really. I mean, you know, you can't worry too much about other restaurants. You can't worry about too much about other extra everything outside the restaurant. You can only worry about your own product and specifically the customers who come into your restaurants.
But when it came to your product, then you're a pretty aggressive guy, right?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, it's a physical impossibility to take a mediocre product and through the wizardry of being a fantastic chef or a great chef and turn it into something truly spectacular. That's a physical impossibility. Any great chef, any self-respecting chef will tell you that the first thing you have to do to make a really astonishing dish is you have to start with the best possible product that you can find and or afford. And that is the secret. It sounds boring, but, you know, and it sounds almost like a cliche, but I think nowadays with truly great quality products becoming harder and harder to find, even with the distribution change, the ability to get anything from anywhere around the world, it's becoming harder and harder to focus in on these really extra special ingredients.
Good time to introduce Cynthia.
Of course.
Cynthia Sandberg, Love Apple Farms. Gosh, I've been watching you for a long time with your tomatoes. You had an incredible selection of heirloom tomatoes. And, folks, I used to love going up to Cynthia's Love Apple Farm and just to take pictures and sample her tomatoes. And I went up there once, and she told me about going out to dinner.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, I went out to dinner a couple, 3 years ago at Manresa after I'd heard about their great success, and I wanted to see what it was all about. Had an absolutely phenomenal dinner. Best dinner of my life, and the chef came out.
What was so good about it?
Oh, boy, everything. Every little ingredient was treated so carefully and lovingly and presented in such an exquisite way that you couldn't help but have a fabulous experience eating it. The service was sublime. The wine was fabulous. The pairing of the wine with the exquisite food and the quality of each ingredient really, really was telling. You could absolutely taste it and experience with every bite.
Did you bang on the table with your wine goblet and say, "I want to meet the chef"?
Actually, the chef came out and introduced himself to me. Somebody had told him that I grow a lot of tomatoes, and he was always interested, currently is interested in sourcing from the Santa Cruz Mountains, and that's where my little micro farm is. So he came out, introduced himself, and asked if I wouldn't bring him some tomatoes later in the year when they became ripe. And I did that, and we started supplying Manresa with tomatoes. And the really great tomato season is very, very short, unbeknownst to a lot of people. Right. And so it was just a small partnership at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the partnership grows when we get back from this break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking a little bit about what it takes to become the very best of the very best. And we're talking about the world of fine dining. We're talking with Chef David Kinch from Manresa Restaurant in Los Gatos, California, and Cynthia Sandberg from Love Apple Farm in Ben Lomond, California, close together, and they're becoming closer and closer as we talk. When we come back, we're going to talk about how they got married, I guess, so to speak, and how they found their way into the mysticism of Rudolf Steiner's biodynamics. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back, please do. Stay tuned. Hey, we're back, and have a special welcome today for all of those people out there in Charlotte, North Carolina, who are tuned in on News Radio 1490, your news authority for North Carolina. We want to welcome you to the Food Chain. So nice to have you aboard today. We're talking with David Kinch and Cynthia Sandberg about what it takes to become the very best of the very best. And these two folks have teamed up to feed you at Manresa Restaurant, which is one of the world's top 50 restaurants, according to Restaurant Magazine. And so we're talking about the world of very, very fine dining. But you're not at all that pretentious, David.
No, we can't be.
People don't show up at your place in tuxedos or anything, do they?
No.
So it's kind of a casual restaurant. I mean, people don't show up in sandals and stuff, but I guess that's the nature of the community, right?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, we're in California. We're not in Midtown Manhattan. You know, where a certain degree of formality is expected. You know, I think the restaurant exhibits a real fine sense of place of where it is. You know, we're in a very charming little town in the foothills of the Santa Cruz Mountains. It's really, really beautiful. It's very, very rustic. The higher up you go into the mountains, there's old, established vineyards that produce mm-hmm. world-class wines up there. And we're very close to the Pacific Ocean. We have all this fertile land around us. It's a great place to be to have a restaurant. But the restaurants, though we strive to be the best possible restaurant we can be, we also, I think, are very reflective of where we are. We have that certain degree of casual elegance that's
that's emblematic of
the California lifestyle. I mean, we have to be a part of that. You know, we can't have everybody wandering around in Armani suits or tuxedos in the dining room. It just wouldn't fly.
Yeah, it wouldn't fly. There's not that many undertakers around anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit with Cynthia Sandberg about her first visit to Manresa Restaurant. What about your first visit to Love Apple Farm?
Well, it's my first contact with Cynthia after meeting her, of course, was when she showed up with the tomatoes that we had talked about.
And there's only two things that money can't buy.
Yeah.
True love and homegrown tomatoes, right?
I'll tell you, and it's the tomatoes were really, really astonishing. I mean, you know, tomatoes have always been a big part of our menus in the summertime and late summertime, but these were truly astonishing. And that was our relationship for the first couple of years. Was tomatoes. And, you know, I think after that first year, I kind of panicked for a bit because I didn't have her contact information after the tomato season ended. And I thought, well, I'll never see her again. And sure enough, tomato season started and she showed up and I was just overjoyed. I was like, I thought, you know, this source was uh-huh. gone forever. So, of course, my first memory of Cynthia, of course, was you know, the quality of products she was bringing to the back door of the restaurant.
And that's what it's all about, because what goes in the back door has to go out the front door.
It's, well, you know, tomatoes, you know, I'm sure we could talk all day about tomatoes, but you know, what was really amazing, and to this day, you know, we just finished doing our tomato dinner for 2 days at the restaurant this past Tuesday, Wednesday, is that a lot of tomatoes that you see, especially heirloom tomatoes do not travel. You can't put them in your car and drive half an hour without them bruising up. So a lot of heirloom tomatoes you see, you know, they're not picked at the optimum ripeness, the flavor ripeness. They're picked at a certain point where, it's a nice compromise of ripeness and the ability to travel and to be manhandled a little bit, mm-hmm. Through the distribution process. And Cynthia truly picked ripe tomatoes. She only cared about that flavor profile and the optimum part of the tomatoes. And you have to handle them like they're water balloons, mm-hmm.
Right,
and you're
right.
afraid,
this is
and you're afraid
what
to,
they are, right?
And that you're afraid to bruise them in any kind of way. You have to be.
So we started looking at, we had this great tomato coming in, but you're looking to maintain your position on the top of the world's finest dining restaurants, and you're looking to make a move here and to take the world of fine dining to another level, and you're looking for your own garden.
Well, sourcing. It's a mm-hmm. It can be a piece of meat, a piece of fish, a piece of fruit. Or the vegetables. It's all about your sourcing. And what happened with me was I was a regular at farmers markets. I went to several farmers markets a week. We drove up to San Francisco every Saturday morning. We picked up a lot of things. And, as good as the products are at the farmers market, I go to the farmers markets and I see 15 chefs. I see 15, 20 chefs, and we were all buying the same thing.
Same thing.
And I thought.
So if you're going to be the best of the best,
what are we going to do?
What
do we
thing,
do next right? level? So it started talking about planting our own garden, and so in a very naive way, I started looking around and asking people about plots of land, and in the back thinking how absurd this is going to be, because how am I going to farm and run a restaurant at the same time? But I started talking to people about land, and I started learning about land and how it's just not how scenic it is or how flat it is. So, there's so many factors in. It reminds me of running a restaurant.
Running a restaurant, yeah.
And I approached Cynthia to ask her if she knew of any land. That was the first question I said. I said, I would like to start a garden and find someone who can run it. And I wanted if you knew anyone who had some land that was available anywhere, on the mm-hmm. central coast of California. And as fate would have it, she says, well, it's funny that you bring that up.
Why?
I was on the other side of the phone. He couldn't see me, but I was eagerly raising my hand, saying, me, I want to do that. And I invited him over to the farm, and he came over. I think it was a rainy day mm-hmm. in February. Probably one of the rainiest springs we've ever had, mm-hmm. and we walk through the garden, and nothing much is happening in February.
Right.
We struck a deal, and he mentioned the word biodynamic, mm-hmm. and I thought, this is kismet, because I had been thinking about transitioning my farm to biodynamics after seeing how lush and fabulous biodynamic farms were. I'd visited a couple and was just bowled over by the fertility and the abundance and the beauty and the health and vigor of the plants.
So, Chef David, this is a leap in two directions then. Not only as a restaurateur, are you taking a leap into sourcing from your own, or as it were, your garden, but you're doing it biodynamically. So these are two new things you're adding to the element of sourcing.
And
possibly
a third also too, because the arrangement between Cynthia and I is truly unique. Cynthia is a much part of the restaurant team as any other employee or any other partner that we have at the restaurant. There's not a daily exchange. There's not a, for every product that comes from the restaurant, comes from the garden to the restaurant, there's not an exchange of cash, fair market value or whatever. It is a partnership in which everything that grows there is for the restaurants. through the agreement that I have with Cynthia.
Is this a new kind of relationship in the restaurant world of fine dining?
I really haven't found anything like it. I mean, there's a lot of show gardens out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really pretty restaurant gardens, you know, where a certain amount is grown.
Yeah,
you know,
go out and pick some basil or something. And this is the real McCoy here. This is,
yeah, and I think there's some really fantastic arrangements too. But I think it involves a fair market value exchange. But I mean, the whole point of this is that everything that could grow, I would be forced to use, and it would be a great challenge for the restaurant to be able to use everything, because you can't disrespect any of the products by wasting it. But also hoping that the situation would allow Cynthia to do what she does best and what she was really in love with, which is growing things and running the garden, and not worrying about schlepping to a farmer's market, not worrying about whether she's going to be able to sell all the zucchini or all the eggplant. She can sit there and know that it's all going to be used, it's all going to be respectfully, so that when she wakes up in the morning and she goes out there, she can really concentrate on what she does best.
Just the fun part.
Yeah.
Yeah, that fun part.
Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain. We're having fun here today. We're talking about what it takes to be the best of the best in the world of fine dining. We're talking about the marriage of a restaurant and a garden into a single unit that produces some of the best foods in the world, as witnessed by Restaurant Magazine. It gave Manresa Restaurant a top 50 position in the world, not just locally, but top 50 in the world. 800-624-2665, 830-479-1080. Right back. Hey, we're back, and we're talking fine dining, the world of fine dining, with Chef David Kinch from Manresa Restaurant in Los Gatos, California, and farmer Cynthia Sandberg from Ben Lomond, California. We're talking a little bit about the relationship and how Chef David is really working hard at maintaining his position, I guess, at the top of the restaurant fine dining world, and he's taking two really incredible steps to do that. He's developed a relationship with Cynthia Sandberg at Love Apple Farm, so that Cynthia is now part of the restaurant team and growing exclusively for the restaurant, and how Chef David is spending, what, 4 days? You said 4 days a week out in the garden itself, so he's really becoming part of the farm as much as you're becoming part of the restaurant. And the other thing they're doing is developing a biodynamic farm, and that's what we want to talk about now. The biodynamics was developed in the 1920s?
Yes.
By Rudolf Steiner. So let's start with Rudolf Steiner. Cynthia, who is this guy?
He was a great thinker, philosopher, back in the early part of the 20th century. And almost the Nostradamus of his time, very well respected in Europe. And back in those days, they had just started using synthetic chemical fertilizers on
the
farmland.
After the First World War.
Right. And the farmers there saw a marked reduction in fertility and health and vigor of their plants over time on these synthetically fertilized fields, and they were wondering what the heck was going on, so they approached Rudolf Steiner and asked him to investigate it and see if he could figure it out. Mm-hmm. So he took quite a long time to ponder it and came up with what he thought was the answer to restoring the fertility of the land.
And when you say Rudolf Steiner was well respected, he was a guy who invented all kinds of things. I mean, he developed a way of educating children, which was called
the Waldorf School
Waldorf
of Education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He talked a lot about soil fertility. He invented his own religion. I think we were jokingly before the show talking about how he probably invented airplanes too, you know, like Leonardo da Vinci or something. So here's a guy that was really well respected, and he looks at the way we're growing, and he says, well, we're doing everything back asswards.
Right.
And what was describe what biodynamics is in its core essential.
In its core essential is treating the farm as a closed loop microcosm of fertility, where you have animals on the farm, you produce those animals produce manures that go and feed the fertility of the farm via compost, and then that is put onto the lands to replenish and revitalize them. Essentially, you shouldn't in a good biodynamic farm, you should not have outside inputs come onto the farm. You create your own fertility, you grow your own seed, because essentially you're selecting seed that fits your particular microclimate. And you grow those seeds year after year, and they become a part of your land and your farm. So they become really endemic to the farm itself. It's a closed loop system, and on our farm we include the restaurant in the closed loop, where we get restaurant scraps. They come back to the farm, they either go to the compost or they go to the animals to be eaten, and then everything that is generated on the farm goes to the restaurant. And so we include the restaurant in the closed loop that Steiner talked about.
Wow. Chef David Kinch, how does that compare with the conventional way of doing things out there in the California Salad Bowl, where they seem to be going in the other direction? I mean, they seem to be getting rid of animals.
That's true. I think the bottom line in terms of the restaurant's viewpoint about it is the quality of the product that's coming from the farm. I do think that it's a step above the fact that a lot of the product comes out of the ground in the morning. It tends to be on plates later that evening. It doesn't even see refrigeration, which can, you know, even a couple hours of refrigeration can deaden aromas that are very, very special about the intrinsic quality of the various vegetables. A lot of the product comes in, you know, the cooks clean it. You know, they're not opening up a box, and everything is nicely manicured and ready to go, you know, maybe a little bit of peeling, but we're getting products that come straight out of the ground with the long greens attached, and all their beautiful ugliness. It has all the dirt on, and the cooks are learning respect about ingredients because they need to take it from that state.
Mm-hmm.
And that
state doesn't come in a box or in a refrigerator.
Yeah. And you know, this composting, I mean, it's not only the scraps from the restaurant, but it's also a lot of the trimming and everything from the vegetables, actually from the garden, that make a major part of what's going back in the compost.
That's the closed loop. But what about the open loop, I guess it is, of conventional agriculture and conventional, conventional restaurants, whereas you're talking about a closed loop system where you have everything happening there on the farm. What we're looking at in the world of agriculture is a system in which we're taking animals out of the farm, off the farm, away from the farm, because of our fear of E. coli. What about, are you guys, do you have that fear?
I don't.
Not at all. I think that E. coli contamination is all about being sloppy, and we're the complete opposite of sloppy. We're very careful with everything that we do. Everything is composted properly at a certain temperature. We don't have animals defecating on any of the produce. It's all they're separate, but then they're included in the system in a proper, meticulous way, a caring way, not allowing them to just run hither and anon over all of the fields.
What is the difference between biodynamics and organics?
It's essential in biodynamic to have animals on the farm, because you have to have that fertility. In organics, you can bring in outside fertility onto the farm in the form of different fertilizers and seed. But in biodynamics, you seek to grow your own seed to create your own fertility. The other small part of it is using astral forces, astrology, a recognition that the moon is also important, not as important as the sun, but there are importances that we see in the moon and the stars in addition to sun as well.
Well, I think anybody who's ever grown plants in a serious way knows that the moon has a big, huge impact. When you're out there on Love Apple Farm and there's a full moon or a new moon, do you see a difference?
I do, and you know, the Farmer's Almanac from last few hundred years, they recognize the moon as a influence on crops as well. If the moons can affect tides, which is water flow.
Right.
There's water flowing in plants as well. So
right.
Why can't the moon affect plants as it affects something as gigantic as the tides?
And okay. human beings.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, that's where it all comes back to. Well, when we come back, I want to ask Chef David about mixing these preparations. And I've seen pictures of Chef David stirring. And I would like to talk about the relationship of preparing things like that. When you're a chef and you're clear at the other end of that food chain, Michael Olson here, this is The Food Chain, and we are talking the world of fine dining with the creme de la creme of fine dining restaurants, Manresa in Los Gatos, and Chef David Kinch, and his partner, farmer Cynthia Sandberg from Love Apple Farm in Ben Lomond, California. And of course, we're talking with you. Pick up your phone and join us, 831-479-1080 or 800-624-2665.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back. Got a good question here from a listener who faxes in. Do the high incomes in Los Gatos and the high prices at Manresa, are those the reason that biodynamics can work?
Well, that is a good question. I mean, one of the reasons why fine dining can be so expensive, I mean, there tends to be a lot of personnel, you know, mm-hmm. attention to detail.
So your restaurant is not big.
My restaurant's
How many people do you serve?
We feed about 65 people a night, and we have 45 employees at the restaurant.
Wow. That's incredible.
And we try to buy the best of everything. You know, the cost of quality meat and fish mm-hmm. and everything that we seek out and is very, very expensive. And we're very fortunate in that what we do is we try to charge a fair market value mm-hmm. for what we offer. You know, yes, we are expensive, but I think in general we are perceived as a value for what we give. But we're very, very lucky to be in an area in which a restaurant like this is viable.
Yeah, it might have a little tougher time in Winnemucca, Nevada.
I wouldn't know.
Not heading there to find out. But great question. Thank you very much. And that is really the core question of does biodynamics make economic sense? And I had some great responses on the forum at metrofarm.com, so you can go there, and there are three great answers to this question. So check that out at the forum page at metrofarm.com. So we have two plates with two dishes that were of the identical thing, and one is good and the other is great. What's the difference?
Well, it's two identical plates of food, the same dish, and one is good as one is great. What is that intangible, the difference between those two plates? Well, a lot of times you can't make a checklist of what that is, mm-hmm. but what I like to believe it is it's a long sum of very small steps that you take towards trying to make that the best it can possibly be. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have this garden. You know, a carrot can be a carrot, but, you know, if it's a carrot that has received a certain amount of attention and it's growing, and then how it's treated at the restaurant, I think it's part of the giant equation. It's a small part of the giant equation of what makes that difference between good and great. Mm-hmm.
And also freshness, too. I mean, the chef will come over and and help me pick things. And we know that in a matter of hours, they're being served to people. Even at a farmer's market, those carrots are going to be a couple of days old by the time they get to the end consumer.
You were talking a little bit off camera, as it were, about the difference between a farmer's market farmer who still is a commercial farmer and an operation like yours that is farming exclusively for a restaurant.
I don't have the same considerations that a market farmer has. I know that everything I produce, the restaurant's going to use or going to try to use. So I can grow things for the restaurant that a market farmer cannot grow because it's not economically viable for him to do. So I can provide him with purple okra when here in California people don't even eat green okra, let alone purple okra. Or I can grow white tomatoes for the restaurant when a market farmer would never be able to sell a white tomato on his stand because people aren't tuned in to how exquisite a white tomato can really be. But through the partnership with the restaurant, I can grow all sorts of very, very unique items that's absolutely fabulous that David cannot get anyplace else.
What's been your biggest disaster so far?
I don't think we've had any disasters.
No, I mean, the first year, the it's more of an annoyance. The first year, we didn't know how much we were going to use of one thing.
Right.
And, you know, so there were certain things that we were growing too much of.
An extra 2 tons of zucchini?
Well, you know, we'd have too much of one thing. We'd have not enough of another.
Yeah.
We'd have gaps in which we'd find a use for something, and it would be going great. But I think after the first year, we're now figuring out the right amounts.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of coordination that has to go on here, right? I mean, you're planning menus, and you're planting plantings, and the two have to go together.
The garden writes the menu at this point.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, we bought certain produce from a company, and we still were going to farmers markets. But we made a pact in the kitchen that once the garden was going full speed, is that we could no longer have the safety net. If we really wanted to use everything from the garden, from the farm on a regular basis, and to actually allow the farm to write the menus, then we'd had to remove that safety net, and that we did. And it's changed the style of the restaurant. It's changed everything that we do at the restaurant.
It keeps you on your toes, though, Chef, doesn't it?
It keeps me on my toes.
Well,
yes.
it has to keep both of you on your toes.
The coordination that it takes of knowing when to sow something so that 3 months later or even 6 months mm-hmm. later, that product is ready for the restaurant, and then when during that time period to replenish that crop and how to coordinate it with the seasons, in order to keep the restaurant in potatoes, let's say, it is a constant struggle because we're growing over 200 different kinds of fruits, vegetables, herbs, and edible flowers for the restaurant. So the management of each of those things is very time-consuming and challenging.
Well, one would suspect so. 200 different varieties?
Over that, yes.
In one tiny little love apple farm.
2 acre plot.
Two acres.
It all.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it becomes pretty intense, doesn't it?
It's intense. It's a challenge for me, and I love it, though.
Okay, folks, this is The Food Chain. We're talking about fine dining, and we're talking with David Kinch, who is the chef from Manresa Restaurant in Los Gatos, and we're also talking with Cynthia Sandberg. And when we get back, it looks like we're going to talk with Steve on the phone. So do stay tuned. Phone numbers, if you want to jump in, we have a few minutes left. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Hey folks, how many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor, you don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
So we had this wonderful question about high incomes in Los Gatos and high prices at Manresa Restaurant. And they are high prices. As a matter of fact, let's bring Asa on really quickly. Asa, you have a question. Fire away.
Yes, I'm just saying, you keep hedging around this question of cost for producing. I want to talk about the cost for eating. How much does it cost me to walk to go? I mean, I don't go up there to the normal restaurant, let alone the extra good one, but I was just curious to know how much it costs to actually, if we should celebrate, how much would it cost to go to this place?
Good question, Asa. Thank you. Chef?
Well, we have two menus at the restaurant. We have a four-course menu, and we have a tasting menu at the restaurant. And the cost is around, for the four-course menu, it's around $92 a person.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lot, but it isn't a lot when it comes to the kind of restaurant we're talking about. Cynthia, you were talking about some of the clientele who patronize Manresa.
They come from all over the world. Once you get the kind of excellent press that that Manresa has received, you attract foodies from all over the world. I know that people will make a special trip from Europe or from New York just to eat there.
Just to eat, all flying all the way from Europe just to eat there. So what's a few bucks? Hey, let's go to Steve. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, hi Michael and guests. I was raised in Summit County, Ohio. Of course, there are Amish people there. All of them, my friends and my mother cooked, of course, but they bought their stuff at the AMP and Kroger, you know? Right. When you went to that fair and bought the Amish pot pies, I mean, the difference was just unbelievable. Of course, they didn't use any fancy spices or anything. They just cooked the same ingredients that our parents did. We used to take a station wagon, me and my high school buddies, and go to the Stark County Fair and just buy every pot pie that they had.
Steve, both my parents were born and raised in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, which is huge Amish country, and I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, the way they farmed just as a way of life really didn't have a label on it, but you know, they were very respectful of the earth and respectful of the seasons, and they knew that not only what was important was what was being grown, but was the dirt that it was actually grown on, too.
Well, they
understood the importance, and I certainly agree with you about the taste of the stuff that comes out of the ground there in Amish country.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, a potato. Something as simple as a potato. They look the same. They, you know, but it's the taste. It was unbelievable.
Well,
okay,
Steve,
thanks.
You're making us all very hungry.
Yeah.
Thanks for the
okay,
call.
Bye.
Thank you.
So, got a minute left, but tell us what to look for in good food.
You know, when I go to restaurants, the question that, you know, what makes me really excited when I go to restaurants is I see a plate of food. I don't say to myself, oh, my God, you know, how did they do that? The question I say is, oh, my gosh, where did they find this? Where did they find this product? That's to me, that's what's really exciting.
How did they source it? Cynthia, you grow this stuff. What's the most important thing for us to realize about growing great food?
That it takes a lot of effort, a lot of time, that it doesn't happen overnight. I'm not making handbags in my attic, and I can't produce something overnight. It sometimes is a 6-month venture from seed to harvest of that thing, whether it's celeriac, which takes 9 months, or a really great tomato that I sow in the depths of winter, and then it arrives at the restaurant in late summer. It takes a long time. They say gardening is the slowest of the performing arts because it takes a really lot of care.
Well, there you go, folks. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Cynthia Sandberg from Love Apple Farm in Ben Lomond, California, and Chef David Kinch from Manresa in Los Gatos, California. We've been talking about the world of fine dining, and this is very fine dining. This is we're talking about the world's top 50 restaurants and what it takes to get there and what it takes to stay there. Sure enjoyed your company today. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.